You're listening to The Tales We Tell, a podcast about spooky stories, unsolved mysteries, and local lore. I'm your host, Hannah Parch.
And I'm Katie.
Welcome back! No longer live.
I know. It both feels comfortable and weird.
I know.
It was funny. I think I told you this, but like it didn't really hit me until several days later.
Yeah.
Like just how big of a deal what we did actually was.
Yeah.
Because I guess in the time my mind was just like, let's just do the damn thing.
Yeah.
Like I'm just gonna do this. Like, you know, I give presentations for groups all the time.
Yeah.
You know, this is old hat for me. Like whatever. And then I was like, well, actually, no, this is kind of a big deal, and it just kind of like grew, and I actually felt like more of an imposter that night for my outfit than for doing a live show.
Your outfit looks so good though. Also, we look so good in those pictures.
Not to toot
our own horn.
I mean, there was a couple that we did not look
mostly
good.
Mostly our faces though.
Well, it's because, you know, you were in the middle of saying something, so your face was, like, halfway talking, and then my face was reacting to it.
I'm, like, scowling in so many of the pictures.
And a lot, I'm just kind of like...
My favorite one, though, is I'm making kind of a scowling face.
The one where I'm, like, doing, like, an awkward, dopey smile?
You're like, doing, like, the help face. Yes.
Like... Half dopey smile, half help me, half constipated.
Yes, it's like a help me with my eyes, but like also you're laughing. And then I was looking at them and I was like, wow, I hope people don't think that I'm a bitch because I look pissed off in half of these.
I think it's just because so much you were looking down at your notes,
yeah.
You know, to be able to read the story to people. And also to kind of hide behind.
Yep.
So you didn't have to, like, make eye contact with the audience and get nervous and thrown off.
AKA, make eye contact with Shelton, because that's always who I caught when I would look out, which is always your husband.
Did you see the picture that I was talking about, though, that I definitely am looking at you with heart eyes?
Oh, I don't know.
Let's see if I can pull that one up.
Well, that actually is a great segue for my first announcement, which is a huge thank you to everyone who either showed up to the live show or has listened to the live show or who by this point will have watched the live show, because I promise I'm going to put that link up. Also to everyone who helped make it happen, because even people who were not necessarily part of like this podcast team, like our friend Kevin, who just helped bring stuff in when we showed up, because he'd been there since 5:30 because he forgot what time it was supposed to start.
Super fan.
Yeah, it was like the funnest night of my life. I was super nervous, but then like I was so happy by the end.
I was nervous, but at the same time I wasn't, because like I said, I'm used to giving presentations. I'm very comfortable giving speeches and whatnot and talking in large groups.
Yeah,
but I still get some butterflies and some nerves. Especially because I'm presenting on something that I'm supposed to be an expert in.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always want to be confident, like, ready to back up everything that I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I didn't have it. I was just there for spice. Like,
for spice.
I didn't have to be an expert in anything. Yeah. So I was able to relax a little bit more. And I just kind of went in with the mindset of, like, well, I already know I'm going to say something stupid.
Yeah.
So whatever. Well. It's just, you know, I have to live in this town. But other than that, it's fine. Fine.
You know what really made me feel nice? Was at the very beginning when you were talking about how the only time Shelton listens to the podcast is when you're on a road trip, and I made the joke about listening to your own voice, and then Blake had a big laugh at that. That made me feel nice. I was like, that was our first big laugh, and it was something I said. I was like, let's have more of that, guys.
I could tell, like, starting out that you were nervous.
Yeah.
So I was like, I was trying to do my best to, like, try and interject a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, like, I don't know, just I was doing what I could to, you know, not only send you the positive vibes, but, like, trying to be as much of a supportive co-host as I could to help you just kind of, like, relax, ease
loosen
into
up.
It. And you did. You did. You loosened it. We got into the store. We got into our groove. And,
yep. The key for me was focus on you.
Yeah.
Don't focus on them. Focus on you.
Yeah. And I was like, I'll pull the audience in a little bit.
Yeah.
And, Yeah. It was but great. It was fun, you know, having the audience there to interact with some. Yeah. And I mean, it was the perfect level of interjections from them. Perfect crowd. Yep. So thank you again, everyone who showed up. You guys were awesome.
Yes. Also, a special thank you to Tony Benda, who was our amazing sound guy for the night.
And thank you for the self-crowing
noise. Oh my gosh, I know.
Self-bleeping is a fun thing.
I know, and we were actually pretty good. I don't think we had...
There was one time that I was too frustrated, and I was I was like, she's badass.
I think there was only one child there, and
then I moved it.
It was my nephew. But he has heard worse.
Well, I'm pretty sure we don't even bleep that on the podcast. No, we
don't. I don't think so.
My thing has always been, if you can say it on TV, mm-hmm. you can say it on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I didn't know until when we showed up and we're setting up and Tony was like, okay, well, the mic stand is going to go here. I thought up until that moment that we were going to be holding our mics because that's what I had asked him for. He was mm-hmm. like, what do you need? And I was like, just a couple handheld mics and like make sure everyone can hear it. And if you could record it, too, that would be great. But, like, if you can't, that's fine.
He went above and beyond. Oh, my gosh.
We looked so professional. And, like, and then it sounds great, too. Like, oh, my gosh. Like, and, like.
I can't wait to hear it. I haven't listened to it yet. I think I'm actually going to listen to it.
I know. And, like, it's, I mean, Tony's just, like, our buddy. Like, he plays D&D with Jarek. And, he was my buddy first. Mm-hmm. And he's just, he's great. Anyways, okay, second shout out is to, I think, your friend?
Carrie. So, like, how many years has it been now? Like, sophomore year of college. Mm. So, a long time ago, when I lived in Chattanooga, I worked at a used bookstore with Carrie.
Ooh.
And, you know, we were friends, we were cool. And... Then I moved back to New Orleans, then I moved to South Carolina, then I moved to North Carolina, and, you know, we're friends on Facebook.
Yeah.
But we haven't talked in years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
And then I posted on Facebook this week about the live show, and Carrie commented, she's like, oh my gosh, that's you?
Which is insane for someone to say. Yeah. About us.
And I was like, wait, what? And she's like, I listened to this other podcast called Morbid.
Yes.
And they have given y'all several shout outs. Like, and I specifically wrote your podcast down. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is one I want to check out soon.
Yes. We made her verify because I did not believe her.
So, yeah, that just kind of adds to the surreal experience that not only did people want to actually come out and see us do a live show, but sometimes, you know, it feels like week after week we come in here and sometimes it's just like talking to the void.
Yeah.
Like, we spend a lot of time making this thing. Again, mostly you spend a lot of time making this thing. And, like, you know, there's a handful of people that we know that listen to it.
Yeah.
But apparently our reach is much farther than we realized.
Yeah.
So it's just really cool that someone I've, you know... known or, you know, really new, like 15, 16, 17 years ago.
Oh gosh, don't age yourself that much. Sophomore year of college? Okay, how much older than me are you? Hi, Carrie. I hope you're listening because I did tell you specifically what episode your shout out was going to be in. Also, two things. Thank you for A, telling us about the Morbid thing. I still don't 1,000% believe you because I'm still waiting to hear it with my own ears because it's just that's just too big of a thing for me to fully wrap my little brain around. I'm not saying you're lying because you have presented very good evidence.
Just it's major imposter syndrome over here.
I just know who they associate with. Like Jonathan Van Ness was on their podcast not long ago. And I'm not going to let myself fully believe that. Anyways. But because of that, I was telling Katie this before we started recording. Now I am obsessed with finding at least one shout out. So I am obsessively listening to their back catalog. And which is great because I'm kind of in a podcast drought right now. I have like a couple that I listen to that come out. But I have to like wait for like Wednesday when Beach 2 Sandy comes out. And then I'm like, okay, now I'm done. Now I have, like, 5 years worth of podcasts to listen to because Morbid's a really good podcast. Yeah, so thanks for turning me on to, you know, another podcast. And also, they were my inspiration for this episode, full disclosure. Also, as I always do, if I find a topic off of another podcast, typically I don't listen to that episode of the podcast because I don't want to, like...
You don't
want to
be influenced. Yeah. Unintentionally copy something that they've said.
Exactly. Yeah. So I will probably actually listen to it after we do this one, but I went into this blind. Actually, most of my information comes from a book that I read, like a brainiac. My last announcement is our episode rating for this episode. I'm going with PG-13. So.
Not Dante or Tiny Tim.
I don't think Dante or Tiny Tim should listen to this one. Which, just for, I don't know, I'm just making calls at this point. Okay. William Allen Durant, and I'm gonna, full disclosure, I did not look up how to pronounce their last name. No idea if I'm saying it right.
It sounds familiar.
Durant?
Yeah. Not because of Duran Duran, but, you know.
I don't know. It's spelled D-U-R-R-A-N-T.
To go with Durant.
Okay.
Possibly Durant.
Durant. I've been saying it Durant in my head this whole time, so.
I'm okay with it if you are.
Okay.
And if anyone else has a problem with it, well, they can just scream at the speakers. Sorry.
I'm not going to say it that much, so. Well, whatever. He was a shoemaker. Is it the same as a cobbler?
I believe so.
Okay. I didn't know if cobblers just repaired shoes.
Yeah, I think it's technically, a cobbler is technically a shoemaker, but mm-hmm. I think it was a different way of making shoes than more modern shoemakers. Okay. And maybe that's why there's a different name or a distinction.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
I don't know.
This is why we need a producer to, you know, look up and fact check and let us know.
We got to message that boat guy.
Yeah.
See if he knows about cobblers. Also, I need a good cobbler if you know one. I got a pair of boots that needs to be repaired.
I can cobble together a good dinner.
I'm sure you can.
And I can gobble it down.
Can you put in a new zipper on a pair of knee-high boots?
I mean, I could, but that just sounds like a lot of work.
I know it does. That's why I have not attempted to do anything with it myself. Okay, William Allen Durant, the shoemaker, married Isabella Matilda Hutchinson in Toronto, Canada in 1870. And then they immediately had three children.
Okay.
Those children were William Henry Theodore, who went by Theo, who was born in 1871. Ulla Maud Alma, which a lot of U's in that name, but okay. She went by Maud. She was born in 1873. And then Edward Thomas, born in 1876, who unfortunately died. I forgot to warn you, there is one baby death. He died of infantile convulsions at 3 weeks old.
Baby seizures?
I don't know. I mean, it's 1876, so could have been anything.
I believe you, anything.
Whatever.
Anything.
William Sr. likely had undiagnosed bipolar disorder, and in 1876, he...
Would it have been diagnosed at that time anyway?
No. Okay. So he likely had bipolar disorder, just based on his behavior. And in 1876, he got sick, which was likely just like a really bad depressive episode. And he went away to England for treatment. I'm getting Theodosia vibes again. Like, he went to a spa for treatment.
If only.
I know.
I had a struggle with depression this week,
mm-hmm.
and I wish I could have just gone to the freaking spa.
Same. If I could treat my anxiety by just going to spas, I'm like... And Memorial Day weekend, I will go to a spa. He returned in 1878, so he was gone for 2 years. Or almost 2 years. I guess I said shortly after 76. So when he got back, he decided, we're going to move from Toronto to San Francisco, because that is where his parents lived. But instead of just... up and moving, he's like, first, I'm gonna go down, get a job, find us a place to live.
Set us up real nice.
Mm-hmm. So...
I know we just got back, but I'm gone again.
Yep, so I'm gonna leave again. So he's gone for a year. And...
How old are his kids at this time?
Well, when he finally sends for them in 1879, Theo was 8 and Maud was 6.
So he's been gone for 3 years now, mm-hmm. which means he left her alone mm-hmm. with a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Yes. And you can take a sip, because that was literally my next point. Says, by this point, Theo and Maude had spent a considerable amount of their childhood being raised by just their mother.
I was going to take a sip anyway, but thanks for the permission.
You're welcome. Okay, so even though William had gone down to, like, find a job and, like, establish a home, the family kind of bounced around for a little bit when they did move, and then eventually they ended up moving in with William's parents for several years. And then in 1888, they were finally able to purchase their own home, or their own house, on Fair Oak Street, which was in the Mission District. I don't know anything about San Francisco, but...
I've heard of the Mission District.
Yeah, I just figured if we had any listeners in San Francisco, you might want to know that. And William's manic behavior often resulted in failed business ventures, which would then lead to long bouts of depression. And although Theo would always speak of him lovingly and would always call him a good father, he was by no accounts a reliable provider.
I mean, yeah, there's a cute book that I read that said some, you know, like a little kid was talking to her uncle mm-hmm. and she said something like, oh, you know, you'll be a great dad. And he was like, really? Because he always thought that he shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Just like, no, you take us to the park and get us ice cream and you don't mind, you know, getting dirty. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and that's all it takes to be a good dad? And she was like, yeah, pretty much. I just thought that was sweet. Yeah. So, like, you know, it sucks that he had this, you know, mental issue, you know, mm-hmm. mental disorder issues, whatever. I know it sucked for the family, yeah. but, like, if he obviously still, you know, during the good times, still loved his kids, like, you don't have to be a good provider to be a good father or
yeah.
good parent.
Yeah. And one thing that I did read was, like, he, like, definitely loved his kids. Like, it wasn't that he wasn't trying. Mm-hmm. It was just, don't try this. But, like, he was living with a mental illness that was, A, undiagnosed, so he probably didn't understand it, mm-hmm. and, B, untreated. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're not understanding what's going on and it's not being treated.
Well, a diagnosis for his condition also probably didn't exist. Yeah. I mean, he's probably seen by society as, you know, wrong. And he probably felt even worse. Like, yeah. you know, I struggle with depression and anxiety brought on by not only just, like, my ADHD itself because mm-hmm. of how my brain interprets things and everything, but also from my lack of diagnosis.
Yeah.
Made life even harder for me.
Yeah.
Because once I had the diagnosis, it was like, oh, okay, well, now I know and I understand how I operate, mm-hmm. so I can, you know, change things yeah. around so I can, you know, just function normally, whereas him, not at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, sometimes it gives me, and, like, not to go on a tangent, I did not know, by the way.
Do it anyway.
Well, I feel better because I didn't realize that May was Mental Health Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. Am I saying that right? Mm-hmm. Mental, yeah. And we haven't said a damn thing about it.
Shame on us.
I know. Anyways.
We'll do it in June. Keep the party going.
One thing that I think helps me, like, with my anxiety, being able to, like, recognize when it's happening is, like, it gives me a little bit of power over it to be like, mm-hmm. okay, those intrusive thoughts are just your stupid fucking anxiety. Like, get it together. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I can be a little bit mean to myself, but, like, that's just your anxiety. Like, that's mm-hmm. not real. Those thoughts that you're having, like, those aren't real. Those are intrusive thoughts. My therapist calls them ants, which is not a great name, she acknowledges, but it stands for automatic negative thoughts. It's like the first thing she ever taught me. And it's like, I know they're not real. Mm-hmm. And, like, sometimes that's all I need to tell myself.
Yeah, I think with intrusive thoughts, I think that one of the tricks too is, like, acknowledge them mm-hmm. and then let them go. Don't try to, like, shut them down or ignore mm-hmm. them or push them away. Like, okay, well, that was a bad thought. Mm-hmm. Let's move on now. Like, we thought it. Okay, moving yep. on. Yeah. But yep. anyway, yeah, no.
Anyways, just poor William.
All to say, you can have mental issues.
Yes.
And still be a loving parent.
Yes.
You can still be a good parent.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so because William was not necessarily able to provide financially everything that his family needed, mm-hmm. Isabella, the mother, mm-hmm. So she had taken up, or she had taken to sewing to provide.
I was going to guess that.
Yep.
Because sewing. I was about to say, not like she could go join the workforce. However, she could be a seamstress and do, you know, take on a lot of side jobs things.
Yep. So she did that while, like, in the years that he was gone to mm-hmm. kind of fill in some of the gaps.
I had wondered.
Yeah. And then as Theo got older, he would work several different jobs to help provide for the family. After high school, Theo attended Cogswell Polytechnical College, where he developed an interest in engineering. While there, he and two of his friends set up a telegraph system thing between their houses. I think I had originally wrote they connected a telegraph wire, but then I was like, I don't know how telegraphs work, so I'm going to change that. Anyways, they made it so that they could send telegraphs directly between their houses mm-hmm. so that they could help each other with homework.
That is precious.
I know. And then they expanded it because their classmates wanted in.
Who wouldn't?
And they called it the peanut line.
Okay. Peanut line. I don't know why, but sure, yeah.
I don't know why they called it that either. And then after graduation, they turned it into a small business that they called the Independent Telegraph Line. And the book was like, this is basically, it was like email.
Yeah.
They were like, think of the craze that email was when it first came out. Mm-hmm. This is how telegraphs were in like the 1890s. I was like, okay. Sure. Everyone was real bored.
No, that sounds hella cool.
I mean, it does sound cool. But like, I guess there was a bunch of like little independent telegraph companies that were just like serving this little need that people had of like wanting to send little instant messages to people.
I mean, think about how valuable instant messages are.
I know.
Like, text messages can be life-saving.
I know.
So telegraph messages also can be life-saving. Like, there's vital importance. Also, what the heck is the answer to number 23?
I'm
stumped.
If I were there, if I was also at the Cogswell Polytechnic College and they had the peanut line, I'd set up my own, but it'd be called the pigeon line and it'd be carrier pigeons.
I'd probably go with the peanuts.
Yeah, but how expensive would that be, do you think, to set up a telegraph line?
I don't know.
Pigeons are cheap.
Maybe I'd just go to one of my friend's house who pigeons, had the telegraph.
Pigeons work for peanuts.
But you still gotta buy the peanuts to feed the pigeons.
Yeah, it's true. Also,
and you gotta clean up after Also, they're birds. You can't trust birds.
They live on the roofs. Haven't you watched Hey Arnold?
No, but I've watched The Producers.
Are there pigeons in that?
Yes, there are.
Oh. In 1893, Theo enrolled in Cooper Medical School in San Francisco, even though he wanted to pursue engineering and he had applied to Stanford. His mother wanted him to be a doctor, and it would be a more lucrative career. And so,
after a lifetime of probably just crazy instability, and also his mom being the only one stable and reliable in his life, I can imagine him being a little bit of a mama's boy.
Yeah.
Respect.
Yep. And he was a mama's boy, and, like, she definitely kind of used him as, like, not like a, well, okay.
Uh-oh, I don't like where this is going.
Well,
you know I don't like
I know,
bad
I know.
Moms. I don't like, or bad parents.
So, she just used him, I think, as a emotional replacement for, like, what her husband couldn't, like, where he couldn't provide, like, the emotional stability that she needed.
I don't like that.
It wasn't great.
Norman!
Yeah. I did read that there were times that, this isn't going to sound good. I don't know why I'm like trying to defend her. There were times that she had Theo sleep in her bed with her. However, the author of the book that I read did not think that anything untoward happened.
I'd hope not.
But they
did they say how old?
He was like a young man, like a, yeah, like
a child under the age, like, because when I was little, I wanted to go sleep in my parents' bed sometimes, and like, you know, even after my mom died, again, I was 10, maybe 11 years old. Like, I wouldn't sleep in my dad's bed, but I would go lay in bed with him for a little bit. It was just comfort. Yeah. And, like, and then I would go back to my bed.
Yeah. I just, think the way I kind of understood it was, like, she maybe craved just, like, a male presence and some stability and protection. Mm-hmm. And he was already providing, like, financial stability for her. And he already kind of felt responsible for her and his sister. And so she was just kind of maybe not even intentionally treating him more as a husband than a son, but, like, not in a sexual way.
Yeah. No,
because
like,
her real husband was, like,
and
absent.
I'm not questioning or finding, or my brain's not going to the sexual side of things. It's just, it's still...
It's weird.
It's not good. Like, because, you know, like... Emotional cheating is still cheating, even if there's no physical thing. An emotional replacement for a husband with your son is not okay.
It's still very weird. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, do you want to...
Again, it's one thing if he's a child and you want to snuggle with your child for comfort.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've had the urge to go and wake my sleeping child up just so I could snuggle him.
You told me that last week, too.
I never do it.
Well, are you ready to see what Theo looks like? He's your first picture in your dossier.
I almost forgot.
I know.
Is he going to be cute?
Sure. I mean, he's not bad looking.
I've got a picture in my mind of what he looks like.
Okay.
Let's see.
Okay.
Nope.
Well, let me read to you the description that I had. So, as a...
He's not unattractive.
No, he's not.
Just, the nope was, he is not what I had pictured.
Yeah. So, as a, like, by the time he was finished growing, he was about 5'5", which, even though it is late 19th century...
He's a short king.
Still short. Which, I like that they put that, because I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that back then everyone was like... Still pretty short. Like 5'6", 5'7" was like normal height, I think, for men. I've got an old yearbook here and it lists heights for this is where I keep all my old yearbooks, by the way. This is my granddad's old yearbook from like 1901. Sorry, my great granddad's old yearbook. And it lists everyone's like height and weight. And I'm like, no thank you, let's not do that anymore. But everyone, like all the men are like 5'6", 5'7", 130 pounds or something. They're all short kings.
My dad was a real short king in high school. He hit his growth spurt, I don't know, like senior year or something. Mm. Both him and my mom were late bloomers, so obviously I was. I think we talked about that at one point.
Yeah, I think we did.
I was also a late bloomer.
I should do a whole episode on puberty and the horror that that is.
Yeah.
Right? Spooky stories, right?
Nightmare is what it is.
Okay, so he had a lean, wiry body. Because he rode a bike a lot. This book described his head as small and oddly shaped. However, I don't think his head looks that oddly shaped. Mm-mm. He had reddish blonde hair. Can't tell that at all.
Now the exposure on this photo does not represent that.
Yeah, no, it does not. His eyes were set farther apart than normal.
I mean...
They look normal
to
me.
In this photo, yes, I can see they're a little bit wide set, mm-hmm. but, like, I wouldn't call them, you know, like, wider than normal.
Yeah, just, like...
Some people have, you know, more narrow eyes. Some people have more wide set eyes. Yeah. Like,
I feel like you'd have to study his face a lot to, like, come up with these descriptions.
But they don't look as wide in this photo.
Right. And then the only kind of weird distinctive thing is that his left ear stuck out.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I can see that.
And I don't know why. I don't know if that's just a genetic thing, but his left ear just kind of pops out. Yeah. And just for shits and giggles, because I don't have any other reason to show it, but once I saw her picture, I had to include it. Second picture is of Maud, and she's just like...
I wondered what she's been up to.
She's a smoke show.
She's gorgeous.
Right?
Oh, damn.
Literally the only reason I included this picture was so we could look at her. She's really pretty.
And that she goes by the name Maud.
I know, right? But she's gorgeous.
Like, nothing against the name Maud, but like, it does not do her justice.
It really doesn't.
Her name, but it doesn't suit her.
She is probably one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen.
Yeah, she is gorgeous. And like, this is, I'm looking at this photo like in the dark.
Yeah.
It's already a dark photo, but.
Yeah, sorry.
Dang.
It's, yeah.
Did she turn out all right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. She actually ended up being, I want to say, a famous performer of some kind.
In vaudeville?
Like a dancer or a, she was a musician of some kind. I don't know if that was what she was famous for. I didn't look into that super hard. Don't look her up yet, though, because you're going to ruin the story.
Oh, I'm not.
Okay. All right, back to Theo.
Okay.
So, regardless of what this description seems to think is an unattractive face, they really describe him as, like, not good-looking at all.
Yeah.
And they're like, regardless of his ugly face.
He's not unattractive.
He's really not.
That first photo, the one without him in the bowler cap.
Mm-hmm.
His mustache is a little bit too much.
But a bit much, yeah.
But in the second one, it's, you know, more, I don't want to say the word manicured, but what's the right, it's tamed, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just trimmed, less pronounced. Neat, he looks much more attractive in this photo. I think also,
he looks a lot older in that top photo.
I think it's just the photo itself.
Yeah.
I think it's the exposure and the color contrast.
Because he's only like 24 in these pictures.
Yeah. So, yeah. Now, I think this is just an unflattering...
Yeah, I agree.
The lighting, the exposure, the contrast...
Yeah.
...doesn't do it justice, because it creates these really dark shadows in his eyes that make them look even more, like, deep-set, but also wide-set.
Yeah.
He looks more attractive.
He looks perfectly normal in the second... Yeah.
Definitely more attractive in the second.
Yes, definitely more attractive. I would agree. Definitely more his age, too.
Mm-hmm.
So he was also very stylish, confident, and charming. He was, like, really particular about, like, the way he was put together. Yeah, and just, like, his clothes and his hair. And, like, he really liked when, like, the longer, I think it was, like, I don't know. He liked when, like, the longer hairstyles came into style. Like, he was very fond of that. And he was just, he was more particular about his style than, say, our husbands are.
You mean my husband, who wears almost exclusively Piggly Wiggly t-shirts?
And he really does. Why does he have so many? Does he buy new ones?
He hasn't in a while, because he has so many, but, you know, a couple have been relegated to, like, yard work and, like, housework shirts.
You know,
a few were about to be relegated to rags. So he probably needs a few more.
I'm gonna get him one. Just
yeah.
And he, you
size
know what?
Size large. He's got broad shoulders.
He's never gonna know about it, because he doesn't listen to this podcast. When's his birthday?
August.
Perfect. I'll get him. I'm gonna get him a new Piggly Wiggly shirt for his birthday.
Okay.
This is gonna
Sounds
be great.
Good.
Okay. Okay, so his style may not have been like our husband's. However, this next part I was reading, and I was getting a little worried, because I felt like this next part was describing my husband. Okay, not to brag, but Theo was described as kind, gentle, and selfless, even as a child. Jarek, don't get ahead of yourself yet. This is not necessarily the part.
So far, that's also Shelton.
Yeah.
That's one thing that drew me to him, is just his kindness in general. I've always said that.
Theo was constantly bringing his mother and his sister gifts. One time when they were on vacation, he taught a little girl how to swim. That same summer, he rescued a woman who was apparently drowning. And he also nursed a duck back to health after it was attacked by a dog.
So, not a serial killer.
No. I also accidentally wrote...
I'm so glad. I was really worried you're going to be like, take a drink.
I also accidentally wrote, nursed a duck back to health after it was attacked by a duck. it's not correct.
Well, I mean, you know how ducks have sex, right? It's basically gang rape.
Oh, yeah.
Ducks attacking other ducks is not an uncommon thing.
It's not true. Yeah, but this particular duck was attacked by a dog.
Took Critter down to the park a couple weeks ago for a little stroll.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely
taught him about duck sex.
we were watching some ducks, and I'm like, oh, well, glad you're too young to know what that is, but enjoy the show, I guess.
In 1894, Theo's grandparents gave him some chickens, and so he built a nice little coop for them. He got some baby chicks, put them in there. He set them up real nice. He got a heater that he put in there. And then overnight, the heater overheated. I know.
Fried chicken?
Not necessarily, but he came downstairs. I don't know who. It didn't specify. It just said a relative. Very calmly and, like, nonchalantly was like, are your chickens all suffocated? Or, like, your chickens are smothered or something. Like, just basically... very nonchalantly was like, all of your chickens are dead or something. And Theo was like so upset and like ran down to, I think it was like the basement where he was keeping them, and like frantically spent the whole morning like rescuing them and like cleaning soot off of their little tiny chick bodies. Like, he was just this like gentle, like, animal love it. I mean, can't you see Jarek doing something like that?
100,000%, yeah.
Just, like, buying a bunch of chickens and then spending an entire Saturday, like, mm-hmm. you know, doing something like that. Theo was also extremely attached to his sister, Maud.
Well, I'm sure they grew up with a father who was in and out of their lives, yeah. but also, like, mentally in and out of their lives.
Yeah.
And, like... I'm sure that there was probably some really, probably scary times.
Yeah.
You know, and like during a really bad either manic episode or even depressive episode, it was probably very scary for these kids growing up.
Yeah.
Watching their father suffer like that.
Yeah. And probably just very unstable and mm-hmm. not unpredictable.
Yeah. I feel like in those situations, you know, like those unstable things, a lot of times will draw people closer together. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it has the opposite effect.
Yeah.
That, you know, it pushes them further apart, and a lot of people are like, as soon as I can, I'm leaving mm-hmm. this.
Yeah.
Which is an understandable reaction, too, but, you know, more often than not, I feel like it.
Yeah.
Bonds them. The trauma bonded them together.
Trauma bonding. But he escorted Maud everywhere. He would take her to movies. He would carry her things for her. This is a quote from the book. He was, quote, acting as if she were his date rather than his sister. And again, I don't think that they meant it in, like, a sexual way, because mm-hmm. they also commented and said, like, he just treated her with, like, a lot of respect.
It reminds me of, you know, stories I've heard about fathers taking their young mm-hmm. daughters out on, you know, air quotes here, dates.
Yeah.
And it's not because they want to date their daughters.
Yeah.
They're, like, 7 or 8 year old daughters, or even yeah. older, they're 15 year old daughters. It's their father taking them out to set an example of mm-hmm. this is the way you should be treated on a date.
Yeah.
Don't settle for anything less.
Yeah. And just, this is the way I think you should be treated. Like, mm-hmm. this is, I have a high,
I respect you, you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to treat you well. And mm-hmm. I also want to just, you know, I don't settle for less. Like, this is what you deserve. Yes. I'm going to treat you the way you deserve. Mm-hmm. And so he, you know, whether intentionally or not, he is setting that standard mm-hmm. so that any other guy date, you know, that Maud did actually go on dates yeah. with, she would be like, you're treating me not as well as
my brother
does. Sorry, you're gone.
Yeah.
Or like, wow, you're really treating me like a princess mm-hmm. that, you know, that I am.
Yeah.
You're a nice guy. Let's go on another date.
Yeah. Good time for me to give a nice shout out to my dad, because he did that stuff. Like, he would take me on...
Did he take you on daughter dates?
Yeah, he took me on daughter dates.
I love that.
I know. And, like, I have a lot of moments where I'm, like... where I'm, like... not comparing, but, like... You know, if Jarek, you know, is, like... You know, if we're fighting or something, and I'm just, like... You know, my dad wouldn't treat me like this. And, like, I mean, Jarek and I are adults, and we always make up and resolve, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, my dad set a very good example of how I should be treated. And, Dad, thank you for that, because he does listen, and he is a patron, so.
And there are there is the flip side of that, too, that moms mm-hmm. will take their young boys out
yeah.
and do the same thing of, like, this is how, when you go out on a date, you should treat a woman. You yeah. know, like, and I fully plan to do that with yeah. Walker and be like, hey, you know, whenever you do want a date, like, just, and it doesn't have to be, like, obviously, this isn't how you treat a woman or how yeah. know, a man to treat you. Like, this is how you should treat another person while yeah. you're on the date. Like, this is yeah. how you be respectful. This is, you know, yeah. just all that.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to do that with Critter. Yeah. Normally, also because I want him to be a mama's boy.
I know. I was like, normalize taking your kids on dates. It's very sweet. Okay. Theo was also an active member of Emmanuel Baptist Church. When I say an active member, Katie, I mean he was a very active member.
I'm scared.
He was the assistant superintendent of the Sunday school. He was an usher for Sunday services. He was the secretary of the Young People's Christian Endeavor Society. He was a member of the choir. He was a member of the orchestra. And he attended services twice on Sundays and once on Wednesdays.
Okay, that was actually me.
That was me too. I was like, oh, I did that.
It wasn't really services, it was more like youth groups, but...
Yeah.
This man, did he sleep?
No, because he's also in medical school.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, all right, if he's just in medical school, I'm already uh-huh. wondering, like, when does he sleep? Because not only is he in medical school, but yeah, he's spending time with his family. Mm-hmm. He's taking his sister out to the movies or to dinner or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. But then he's also always at church, or he's... Yep. Always doing so many
extracurriculars.
Like, so there's a movie I've been thinking about lately because mm-hmm. I've been trying to think of different movies that I want to be sure to show Critter when he gets older so he can understand like how life used to be.
Yeah.
One of them is Empire Records.
Okay.
Because it's all about a CD store.
Yeah.
He won't know what CDs gosh. Are. He's Man. Not going to know what a compact disc is. Wow. One of the characters in Empire Records is that, you know, yeah. she's the, you know, trying to be valedictorian and doing all of the extracurriculars mm-hmm. and blah, 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 blah. Turns out the way she does it, speed. Caffeine pills.
Yeah, that, I mean, 1890s, was there still cocaine in Coca-Cola? Was Coca-Cola around?
See, this is, we need a producer.
I know. God, man.
Send your applications in, people.
We can't pay you. No. Sorry. Yeah, so he's, like, super active in church. But he's also at this weird point in his life, right? So he's in medical school. He's, like, kind of getting a little bit of independence from this, you know, like, he's a mama's boy, but now he's, like...
When does he have time to be a mama's boy at this point?
Well, he still lives at home. So he's a mama's boy.
He has
boy
a few hours a week,
in the evening.
Sounds like.
But now he is among these peers in medical school, and he really wants to fit in with them.
Because who doesn't want to fit
doesn't?
In?
Who doesn't? That's true. And
there's nothing wrong with wanting to fit in.
True. I disagree with what he does next, however.
You got to find your tribe. Like, yeah, just yeah. because you know, like, you don't have to fit in with that group. You have to find yeah. a group that you... belong with.
Yes. So, although Theo had confessed to one of his close friends that he actually did not have any sexual experience, he would openly brag around his classmates that he had slept with a bunch of women, including girls that he'd met at church and prostitutes. Spectrum. Wide spectrum.
Is he naming the girls at church that he slept with?
I don't think so. Okay. I think he's so, like, just like
it's an emotionally immature thing, like mm-hmm. that's high school boy level yeah. thing to brag that, like, oh, I've banged these other chicks, you don't yeah. know her, she goes to another
that's
school.
My yeah my girlfriend in, from Canada yeah. where I used to live.
But that did. Actually might be believable yeah. because he did used to live in Toronto.
Yeah,
no, that is not okay. It,
yeah,
like it's not good, it's not cool. Yeah, but as long as he's not specifically naming these
yeah.
women,
yeah,
then I'm not mad at him.
Yeah,
it's more shame on you.
Yeah, shame on you. Not great,
because I don't want him like yeah. dragging these other women under the bus.
Yeah,
because at that time,
oh yeah, yeah,
it was still like men. Somehow men could be sexually promiscuous, mm-hmm. but women couldn't. Like,
yeah,
it's still sometimes very much that way.
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm. it's frustrating. But at that time, it was even more so. Like, There was, it was unacceptable.
Yeah.
Woman was ruined if she had any kind of sexual contact before marriage. Meanwhile, he's around bragging.
Yeah. He actually made a comment. This was like an example of it was supposed to be an example of like the way that he thought of women. And it was supposed to be an example of like the respect that he gave them. But it was, I think it was more commentary of like the way women were thought of at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, I think he knew these girls or something and they had gone to like a particular club or something. And he was like, oh man, if I found out that some guy had taken Maud to that club, I would like kill her or something. And it was like, it's strange that he mentions that he would like kill his sister or, you know, like be mad at his sister for letting a guy take her to like a shady club rather than be mad at the man who took her there.
Oh, because it's always blame the woman.
Yeah, it was, but it was, it that same thing that you were talking about, like, it's not the man's fault that he took her there, but, like, shame on his sister for allowing herself to be sullied by going to such a place.
And is he, like, the OG nice guy? Like, the meme of the nice guy that's not a nice guy? That, like, oh, you know, he's so nice to his sister, and, like, you know, he dotes on, like, all his female friends, or, you know, like, all the women. He's like, oh, but I love women. I respect women. Like, you're a princess. You deserve to be treasured. And she's like, thanks. I'm just not interested. Well, you're a whore.
kind of. I'm going to let you decide, because I don't know. I have an opinion, and I'm about to get to kind of a little theory. So he also took up smoking while he was at school, but he actively tried to hide this from his mother and from anyone from church who might see him.
Med school is very stressful, I hear.
Yes.
Nicotine helps with stress.
Yeah.
I mean, well, yeah.
Yeah. And then when his classmates gave him a hard time about being at church so much, he told them he was just there to try and gain potential clients for when he became a practicing doctor. He was like, oh, I'm just doing it so I can, like, you know, I'm just, like, networking. I'm not really there because I, like, love God.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just...
Gosh. Like, just own it.
I know.
Like, if you want to be a Jesus freak, go for it. Be it. Own it.
I know.
I mean, don't rub it in anyone's face because that's really annoying.
Yeah. But he's very much in that... I mean, I remember
being... This is so emotionally immature.
I know.
Though. Like,
but don't you remember being...
middle school, high school.
I know. I know. But, like, I remember being in that place where I felt like I couldn't own anything. Like, you think... Like, where you're, like... You know, you think if someone thinks that, like, that thing that you think is cool is stupid. Like, oh, Katie reads weird erotica novels online. Oh, that's so stupid. And you're like, no, I don't really do that. I say it as a joke.
I haven't read that Clippy one. Oh, speaking of, no, I was talking to my friend and I mentioned the Clippy one. Because it's on my Kindle. I just haven't read it yet. And it's just one of those things I'm like, I want to, but like, Clippy still holds a special place in my childhood, in my heart. Like, do you really want to paint that? But I was telling my friend about it, and she's like, there's one on Mothman. She's like, I recently read a Mothman erotica, and she's like, it's really good. And then she messaged me later. She's like, actually, I just finished it and got really weird at the end, in, like, not a good way. So I don't know if I recommend it anymore. It's like, dang it, I want to read Mothman erotica.
Man. You should do like a monthly.
Honestly, I don't know if I would read it or not. Like, it might end up on my Kindle and just sit there for
you
months.
Should,
and
this
months.
Is what you should do. You should do like a quarterly cryptid erotica recommendation for us.
That means I'm gonna have to start searching for
just
it.
Listen, just give you something to.
I think actually the author who did the Mothman does have like a series of cryptids.
Find the author for me. I'll find one.
I'll have to ask
just for my own.
Maddie sent me the link.
Okay. All right. Share it with
look
me.
It up.
Oh, man. That's a weird episode.
I mean, I do. I get where he's coming from. Like, the you don't want to, you know, admit to liking something that, like, everyone else thinks is lame. And so, I mean, yeah, there were definitely times where I would kind of maybe downplay my interest in sling because someone thought it was lame. But for the most part, I kind of owned my interests. And if some person or like group of people were like, oh, you don't like that? I was like, I don't think I like you. I don't really want to hang out with you. Like, you make me feel bad about myself was more of the thing than I'm desperate to hang out with you.
Yeah. I think maybe he's just not as confident as he thinks he is. Yeah. Because confident, if you have real confidence in yourself, then he would just say, no, like, church is a big part of my life, and I go there because I like it.
I mean, he theoretically, by being involved in all of these, like, activities and different things throughout the church, he should have his tribe, his people. Like, he should have other people there that are friends. She's giving me a creepy look, which obviously means I'm about to take a drink.
Yes, you are.
But, like, by having that group, he should be okay. Shouldn't need to... What,
yeah. He spends a lot of time with it. Yeah.
Your creepy take a drink look.
Yeah, take a drink.
Bring me off where I was going with that.
Okay. Okay. In the spring of 1894, Theo came down with a little something called meningitis. And not the nice kind. The bad kind.
Meningitis is all bad.
Well, the really bad kind.
Did he lose his hearing?
No.
There is a book that's fabulous, and one of the characters is deaf because he got meningitis.
Oh.
And between the meningitis and the hella strong antibiotics he had to take to fight the meningitis, he lost, like, most of his hearing in one ear and a good portion in the other ear, to the point where he mostly deaf and, like, lots of bad tinnitus and, you know, fabulous book.
Theo does not lose his hearing, but he does almost die.
Well, I mean, that sucks too, but, you know.
So it takes him, like, months to recover. I'm assuming this is, like, bacterial meningitis, which I think is, like, I don't know. I've read up briefly on it. He loses, like, 40 pounds. Anyways, so he does...
He didn't have 40 pounds to lose, sounds like.
He was, like, 100...
I don't have 40 pounds to lose. I have some pounds to lose, but not 40.
He was, like, 120 pounds, and he lost, like, 40 pounds or something. And, So he, like... He got better. I got better.
She turned me into a newt. I feel like Monty Python references should also be...
I was just about to say that. We gotta throw that up there. So... One thing I did learn about meningitis, according to meningitisnow.org, is that you can get an acquired brain injury from it. It's not common, but also almost dying from meningitis is not super common. So an acquired brain injury often takes months or years to, like, manifest. Symptoms can include behavioral changes such as aggression, mood swings, obsessive behavior, depression, impulsivity, disinhibition, and sexual inappropriateness, among several other things.
But you've highlighted those.
I highlighted those. And again, there's, like, obviously no proof. I don't think that, like, we have his brain. But
did you get me your brain? Yes. Abby something. Abby what? Normal. Abby normal. Are you telling me you got an abnormal brain? Young Frankenstein.
Oh, okay. I was like, I don't know what book we're doing right now.
It's Gene Wilder. Yeah. I love Gene Wilder. You should read his autobiography.
Okay.
Kiss Me Like a Stranger. It's fascinating. When I read that book, I could literally hear his voice in my head narrating it.
Ooh, I love books like that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, so there's no proof that Theo did end up with neurological damage or an acquired brain injury, but it is possible that he had some kind of
neurological... He almost died and he recovered and had some personality changes.
Yes, that were not... Well, I'm just going to say he almost died and he got better And then later some stuff happened that I'm going to tell you about. So you were speaking of Theo's tribe at church. Church tribe, if you will.
Yep.
Well, Theo did actually get along better with women than he did with men. And he befriended a lot of the young women at the church where he spent so much time.
I mean, he sounds like he was very non-threatening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not only was he short, so therefore not, like, tall and imposing. He was, as you said, kind of wiry, so not real bulky. Like, he just, he didn't have an intimidating frame. That and that he cared about his appearance.
Yep.
And he probably just always looked nice and pleasing and not intimidating. Yeah. So,
and plus, like, he respected women.
Yes.
You know,
he
to some extent.
doted on his mother and his sister.
Yeah.
And, like, what girl doesn't swoon at, like, oh, he's nice to his mom.
Yeah.
He's sweet to his sister. Like, women eat that shit up.
Yeah, we really do. So, a couple of these lady friends that he had. So, the first one was Lucille Turner. And she was described a lot of places as buxom. But she was also described as a teenager. Like a high school teenager. I know. I read the one description and I was like, oh. And then I was like, wait, is this
a There's a very small window of being a teenager that's like acceptable.
I know. Well, because.
And even still, depending on the rest of the context of the story, that window is even. Is still not acceptable.
Well, a couple of these other ones are like 19 when he meets them. And so I'm like, okay, that's acceptable.
That's in the window.
But this girl's like 16 when he meets her.
That's not in the window.
When she's hanging out with him. And I'm like, can we stop calling the 16-year-old buxom? Like, I'm uncomfortable with this. She's a child. Anyway, Lucille taught Sunday school at Emmanuel. And she also helped Theo with the church library. And thankfully, Theo appeared to regard her more as a sister than a love interest. I'll leave it at that. And then we have Flora Upton, who went by Flo. And she was a pretty, quote, non-threatening girl. She was pretty, comma, and then non-threatening. So she was, like, pretty looks-wise. And then
okay, so she wasn't pretty non-threatening.
No.
She was pretty and
pretty non-threatening. She was
I don't know what non-threatening implies, especially in that time period.
I don't think she was a Maud. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I guess I can imagine pretty and non-threatening. So, like, just like a simple, like, maybe like a girl next door. Girl next door, like, classic, simple. Not striking.
Didn't have a lot of big plans.
Didn't turn heads. Mm-hmm. Just like, oh, she's a nice, pretty face, you know, pleasant to look at.
And I don't think she made a lot of demands on him. I think she was probably pretty agreeable.
Mm-hmm.
She was a year older than Theo. She worked as a governess and a teacher, which were like acceptable jobs, like of the same class level as him. She traveled a lot, so she wasn't in town, which was something that appealed to Theo because he didn't want to be
tied down.
Yeah, he didn't want to be tied down. And in the fall of 1893, Theo and Flora get sort of engaged. Sort of engaged because
okay.
There was no official announcement.
Mm-hmm.
There were no wedding plans. It was just kind of a mutual agreement between the two of them that once Theo was done with med school and he was a doctor, that they'd get married.
Okay.
So I feel like it was one of those agreements you make with like one of your best friends where you're like, if we're both 40 and unmarried, we're going to marry each other.
I actually had one of those agreements.
I think I had one too. I can't remember for the life of me who it was with.
Casey Young.
Oh. Is he still unmarried?
I don't know. Every time I think about it, I'm like, I need to look him up on Facebook and see.
Got some bad news for him.
Yeah. Sorry, Kaylee.
Out of luck. After Flora, Thea met Minnie Williams. And I actually have a picture of Minnie to show you. And by I have one to show you, I mean look in your dossier.
Hey, Maud.
Yeah, Maud.
Hi, Minnie.
Is that Minnie? Is that the right one? Okay, great.
That's what the thing says. Great.
Okay. So Minnie was a petite, feisty, talkative 19-year-old, which I don't like when people call girls feisty, because I feel like that just means they had an opinion.
Yeah. She had a background and stood up for herself.
Yeah. Thea met her around the same time as his engagement to Flora. Minnie was a working girl who...
Gotcha.
So she had actually stayed in San Francisco after her mother returned to Ontario with her siblings in 1893. And this is actually kind of badass. So Minnie had discovered that her father was cheating on her mother, devised this whole plan for, like, to get her mother to find out by, like, basically making sure her mom would be in the same place as her dad and his mistress. And then when her mom found out and then divorced her dad, the family was kind of struggling to make ends meet, and they eventually had to move back to Canada, where they had family anyways. And Minnie chose to stay behind in San Francisco to kind of pursue her own life. Also, this is going to sound whatever. When I say she was petite, she was like 90 pounds and she was under 5 feet tall. Okay, so Minnie was a working girl who had stayed in San Francisco after her mother returned to Ontario with her siblings in 1893. And this is because Minnie had discovered that her father was cheating on her mother. And then she devised a plan to get her mother to find out about this by making sure that her mother was, like, in the same place that her father and his mistress would be at the same time. Oof. I know, she's a crafty little girl.
It's just, I don't know, like, cheating to me is such an ick.
I know.
But, like... Yeah, she probably did have to get her mother to catch them.
Yeah.
To believe it, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Versus, like...
I don't know if it had to... If that had something to do with, like, making sure that her mother would be able to get a divorce. Because her mother definitely got a divorce after that. I don't know how hard or easy it was for women to just divorce their husbands back then. But her parents did divorce because they didn't have... the father's support. It was kind of hard to make ends meet, and so her mother eventually decided to move back to Canada with her siblings, but Minnie wanted to stay in San Francisco and try to kind of make it on her own.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say Minnie was petite, she was like 90 pounds.
She does look tiny. She's in this picture.
Very small. She was under 5 feet tall, and so she was often mistaken for a child. So she's just very small.
I hope that's not why he liked her.
I don't think it was.
Okay.
I mean...
I'm always just like, I know that's unfair to, like, small women or petite women who do look very young for their age.
Yeah. I don't know that he necessarily liked her for better reasons, which we'll get to, but she had some kind of health problem that I didn't look that far into, but it kept her from being able to work full-time. And so she decided that she was going to get married, regardless of her working girl status. And so she was, like, actively dating.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the men that she dated was Theo, who was possibly seduced by her, like, unobtainable status, meaning that he was not supposed to be dating someone of her class.
Yeah.
But it's also possible that he thought that he might be able to, like, that she might be easier to persuade to sleep with him. Like, that she might be, like, a looser girl. Which is what I mean by, like, maybe not the best reasons. So, they start, like, I think secretly dating. I couldn't quite tell how secret it was.
Because he was also kind of, sort of, not really engaged.
Yeah, because he's, like, definitely still engaged to Flora. He definitely kept it a secret from his mother because he did not want mom to find out.
Mommy Dearest wanted the absolute best for her baby boy.
Yes.
You know, that's why he was becoming a doctor, not an engineer.
And he shall not date a working girl.
You know, if anything, he needs to date up so that, you know, like, he can be, you know, into society.
Yeah. Theo did try to get Minnie to have sex with him, but she refused. By all accounts, he, like, respected that. And then she kind of broke it off with him, like, shortly after that.
She's like, if that's all you're after,
indecent then... indecent proposal.
I'm out.
Yeah.
And it's not you, it's me. We want different things.
We want different things. And then, in September of 1894, Blanche Devereaux... I'm kidding. Blanche Lamont.
I was like, I know that name.
Yep. Blanche Lamont.
Is she cute?
I know.
She also looks very young.
I think she's a little younger in that picture. Mm-hmm. I included a second picture, which is the next one, which is a group picture.
For the arrow.
You're welcome. She's a teacher in Montana in that picture. She looks a little older in that picture. Mm-hmm. She's 19 when she gets
to San Francisco. Well, I mean, she's also next to a bunch of obviously very young children, so obviously she looks a little older. But no, she does look older.
Yeah.
A little bit older than in this portrait.
Yeah. That was the only picture I could really find of her. So she arrives in September of 1894, and Theo is immediately like...
drawn to her.
This is the love of my life. This Blanche. She had moved to San Francisco to further her education, and she was living with her aunt. She was 5'7", so she was like a tall queen. Mm-hmm. She had brown hair, a slender build.
And so she was, what, 2 inches taller than Theo? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I know. He was into tall queens. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of shy, and apparently Theo liked her because she reminded him of Maud, which I'm like... It's kind of gross, Theo.
I mean, there is that, like, it's not a theory. It's just kind of like a colloquialism of, like, you know, girls go after someone who reminds them of their dad.
Yeah. And
guys go after someone who reminds them of their mom.
Not looks-wise, though. Come on.
No, not looks-wise. I mean, like, just, like, personality traits or things. And yeah. I have always been like, I am definitely not doing that. And then there's certain things that my husband will do when, like,
when I see
the same way.
When I see the similarities between me and Stephanie, mm-hmm. I want to laugh so hard because I'm like, Jarek, you don't even know. You don't even know, man. Stephanie is Jarek's mom, if anyone's wondering.
I see a lot of similarities between me and Dorothy, too.
Yeah. But,
like, I don't know. There's definitely similarities between my dad and Shelton.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot.
Yeah.
It's a few, it's like little quirks more than like personality traits that I see the similarities of that, you know, like I'll be folding laundry and I'm like, oh, well, these socks need to go. There's a giant hole. And he's like, oh, the socks are fine. I'm like, oh my gosh, you are not my father. This shirt has holes in it. I'm throwing it away.
I should ask my mom if my dad does the same thing because Jarek holds on to underwear, famously, that has holes in it. Or any clothes that have holes in
like
it. Or,
like, the waistband of the underwear is, like, so stretched out.
I will have to... if I find underwear that has holes in it, I will rip the holes before he can get a hold of them so that he physically can't wear them anymore.
I've done that with shirts before. I rip them, and then I go put them in the rag bin.
It's sneaky. And you know what?
I mean, like, his work socks or, you know, his other socks. If there's holes in them... I just throw them away.
And you know what?
And I don't tell him about them.
You know what's a hilarious thing? Is the person who does the laundry gets to decide that.
That's right. That is right. And I am the sole laundry doer in the house because I get mad when Shelton does the laundry because he doesn't do it right. No,
I ain't mad when Jarek does the laundry.
Oh, he just does it all willy-nilly.
Oh, we do our laundry willy-nilly too. Except currently our washer is broken. So say a prayer for us, everyone.
Didn't you just fix your dryer?
Yes, we did. We are going to attempt to DIY fix the washer, too.
Well, you can do it. I believe in you.
Thank you. We think...
But if you need a washer in the meantime, you can come use ours if you have
to. Thank you. I think we're going to have to go to the laundromat for our rug, though, because I think that's what broke our washer. Mm. Anyways. All right, so Theo is smitten with Blanche, so much so that 3 months after meeting her, he proposes to her. And she...
What does Flo think about this?
Oh, we'll get to that.
Oh, goodness.
And so Blanche is like, maybe. And then Blanche is like, wait, are you already engaged? And Theo's like, no. And then she finds out he is, and she's like, not only am I not going to marry you, we are breaking up. So Theo is devastated. Right after this, he gets even more bad news. His beloved Maud is going to Berlin. She announced that she's going to go to Berlin in February to further pursue her music studies. So Theo is now like, ugh, I've lost Blanche.
Two of the most important women in my life. At least I've still got you, mother.
So he's like, you know, distraught. He and his mother make plans to join Maud after his graduation at the end of the year.
For a visit or, like, join?
Join. He's going to go to school. He's going to do, like, postgraduate, whatever you do after med school.
Residencies, usually.
I don't know. They said more schooling. He's, like, 23. That's too young to be a doctor, surely. I don't know.
Doogie Howser.
It's also the 1890s. It's like 1895. I'm pretty sure.
There was also a lot less to know at the time.
Barbers could still be doctors.
I mean, they didn't have a diagnosis for bipolar disorder.
That's true.
There was a lot less that they knew at the time.
Women still couldn't ride on trains because our uteruses would fall out of our bodies. Shortly after Maud left, Theo and Minnie get back together. And then in March, Flora is like, you know what? You're dating around a lot. I think we should break off our engagement. All right. So it is March of 1985. He only has one girlfriend. It's
Minnie.
And now it is Wednesday, April 3rd. And Blanche, I should have gotten you Barbies to keep everyone straight. Blanche is leaving her cooking class with a friend. Cooking is like part of her real school class. With a friend at 2:55 p.m. And they are both headed for a streetcar named Desire.
Ding, ding.
And she runs into Theo, who offers to accompany her wherever she is going. By all accounts, she seems very happy to see him.
Is this the time period where women started wearing hat pins so that they could fend off...
Probably.
Skanky men.
I don't know.
And stab them when they tried to assault women?
I hope so.
There's a whole dollop episode about hat pins.
Yeah, I think I listened to that.
And I feel like there was, like, streetcars involved, so that's where my head went.
So they board the streetcar together, and they sit in the dummy seats, which are, like, the outside seats.
Okay.
Not the inside seats. So several people see them because they're basically being paraded through the streets. Theo has his arm around Blanche. He seems to be talking very softly to her. She's smiling and laughing. Like, they just seem to be very flirty. Like, she seems to have completely forgiven him for proposing to her while already being engaged.
How much time has passed?
It is April, and he proposed to her in December.
Okay.
So it's been a little bit of time.
But they were only, like, dating for, what, 3 months, you said?
Yep.
So, you know, it's been 4 months now since they broke up.
And she's still fairly kind of new in town. Like, she's only been there since September.
I mean, they had a short romance.
Mm-hmm.
It's been longer since they broke up than they were together.
Yeah.
Like, I could totally see her just being like, you're an old friend. Like, mm-hmm. We're just catching up. We're just having a nice time. And, like, obviously they had some chemistry, so they'll have some now. But it doesn't mean that she's like, I'm interested in rekindling anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And he could just be being nice.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I do know, but. Yeah. Okay. So they get off the streetcar at.
Oh, they get off, do they?
They get off. Just before 4 o'clock. And they continue down the street, again, seen by several people, and they go towards Emmanuel Baptist Church. Mrs. Caroline Leake, who lived across the street from the church, saw them go in through the side door at 4:15 because she was waiting for her daughter, so she's, like, looking out her window constantly. And she remembered thinking that there would be so much gossip in the neighborhood if anyone had seen them going into the church alone. Specifically, she remembered there would be gossip about Blanche. If anyone had seen her going in
because again,
with a boy.
Women are not allowed to be promiscuous.
But then she said that she considered Theo, quote, above reproach. Like, oh, he was such a nice boy. Like,
so she can be like, I can't believe that on like in the same breath, she can condemn Blanche for how dare she go into a church alone with a man. Meanwhile, praising Theo for being such a nice gentleman to escort this young lady to the church. Like, oh, you know, he was just seeing her to the church to make sure that no harm befell her. Meanwhile, but she's a slut.
Yeah. I can't believe Blanche is going into a building alone.
With a man.
With a man.
But that man is such a gentleman.
I know, but oh, I
wish. Escorting her.
She's like, I wish my boy was more like Theo. I love that we gave.
I hate people.
I love that we gave Southern accents to San Francisco. Yeah,
California. Jeez.
So shortly before 5 o'clock, 18-year-old George King goes to the church, and he enters through the front doors.
So 45 minutes later.
Mm-hmm. He is there to practice two organ pieces that he has to perform for the upcoming Easter service. And he knows Theo very well. They worked closely in the church library. So he also has a key to the church. And when he enters, George immediately notices two things. Number one, the library door, the church library door, is wide open, which is very strange because apparently there are so many like weird little offshoot, like strange facts. One of which is that the janitor that cleans the church, his kid apparently was a thief and would like steal from the church library. And so they had to put a giant lock on the door. Specifically of the library. And so they were really vigilant about closing the library door and locking it.
Who's stealing religious texts?
No, he was stealing crayons and chalk.
That actually seems more profitable.
Yeah. The second thing that George noticed was the smell of gas. George had recently installed a new gas jet in the library. And so...
A what now?
Listen, I did my research. I assumed that you were going to know what this was.
I know about a lot of old shit, but not that.
So, my assumption, I'm thinking of, like, a lamp, like a gas lamp, and you just turn a knob, and, like, a little jet of gas shoots up to light it. This did not seem like that, because he, like, kind of goes into a closet to look for the gas. So I don't really know. I think maybe it has something to do with heating the building.
That's what I was kind of thinking. Because, like, we've got a propane, like, a little tank heater. So it sits on a propane tank, and it's two little heater things. And I
don't know. Let's just go with he smells gas.
Got it. All right.
So he's like, I'm going to go find the source of this gas. It's a wonder that George did not die because he goes into this library and the way he's going to check for the gas leak, lights a match, waves it around. I don't know what he thought the worst outcome was, but I don't think that's how you check for a gas leak.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Anyways, he didn't combust, so.
What I probably would recommend is if you smell gas.
Leaf?
And, like, you can't obviously identify right away where it's coming from. Like, oh, look, there's a gas stove. One of the knobs is turned, but there's no flame. Let me turn it off.
Yeah.
Then leave.
Yeah.
Don't let anyone in the house. Like, open doors, windows, let it air out for a little bit. But if you can't identify immediately where the gas is coming from, probably leave, and I would probably, I guess, call the fire department.
Yeah, that's probably smart.
I mean, it's not a professional recommendation, but I'm pretty sure that's what you do.
Sounds about right. He doesn't do that. He is just like, well, I can't find it. There doesn't seem to be anyone else here, so he locks up the library.
So he locks up the smell of gas.
Yeah.
He locks up a room full of gas. Okay.
And he's like, I'm just going to start my organ practicing.
Church go boom.
So he starts playing the organ. Suddenly, out of nowhere, Theo shows up. Seemingly coming down from the stairs of the belfry, the bell tower, mm-hmm. if you will. Mm-hmm. And Theo looks like absolute shit. He is pale. He is not wearing his coat or his hat. He's got dust on his pants. His eyes are watering. He generally just looks like he's going to, like, pass out or vomit or both. He's just, like...
Meanwhile, Theo's a very well-put-together gentleman.
Yes. So this is, like, very alarming. George is like...
Meanwhile, if I looked like that, everyone would be like, oh, having a normal day, huh? Like, because normally I look like shit, is what I'm saying.
Or it's like if a girl doesn't wear makeup one day and, you know, her employer says, are you tired?
Yeah, you feeling
well? Do you feel okay?
You sick? Meanwhile, I feel like, what did I say? I thought at the live show, just me dressing up and putting makeup on or putting nice clothes on, I thought that I looked like either a hooker because I was wearing heels, or that I was like, are you sure I don't look like I'm 40 trying to look 20?
We both felt like that. Felt like we were old looking, trying to look like we were young.
Like, I'm not trying to look young. I just wanted to just enhance what was already there.
Wait, you did. You did. You look very nice.
Thank you. So did you.
Thank you.
I guess I feel more about an imposter about that than just... Okay, so no. Theo looks like shit.
Yeah, Theo looks like shit. He tells George, he's like, I've been working on the gas jets again in the sunburners, which
the what?
I did look those up. They are fancy gas powered chandelier looking light fixtures.
Okay.
They're just big gas powered lights. Okay. He's like, I've been working on those and the fumes made me real sick because I've just had the gas on this whole time. And George is like, why the fuck did you do that? That's stupid. And Theo's like, can you run to the store really quick and get me some bromo seltzer? Look that up. That is either an antacid or a pain reliever. Either or.
Seltzer automatically implies antacid to me.
Yeah. It's like a brand. So I think it's mm-hmm. like, I don't know.
Alka-Seltzer.
Yeah, it's like, can you go get me an Alka-Seltzer? But it's like... At one point, it was an antacid, and then at some other point, it's like if Alka-Seltzer in the 1990s started adding acetaminophen to it, and you don't know which one he got. Anyways, so George is like, sure.
Why can't you go get it? I'm practicing the organ.
I know, George is like, I gotta practice.
You clearly need fresh air.
So he gets back, and Theo tells George, because George is like, why didn't you come get me, and I could have, like, turned the gas on and off for you so that you wouldn't just have gas blowing in your face this whole time. And Theo's like, well, the funny thing is, I was headed to your house, but then I ran into Blanche Lamont on my way here, and she asked me to walk her to school.
Okay, well, first of all, I have some issues.
Okay.
Because it took them like an hour via streetcar because you said it was like 2:55 mm-hmm. she was leaving class. Mm-hmm. So it's basically 3:00.
And see, then you do remember shit.
I pick up on random things that I decide to remember. Mm-hmm. And so they got off the streetcar at 4 and were entering the church at around 4:15. Mm-hmm. So I forget where I was going with it. See, I... my brain is a mystery, y'all.
It's okay.
But, I mean, it took them an hour, over an hour from when he first ran into Blanche mm-hmm. to the time they walked into the church mm-hmm. was an hour and 15 plus minutes.
Uh-huh.
Continue your part of the story. I'm just, okay. I just want to reiterate that so that yes. everyone else remembers. Yes.
It was a long time.
That what actually happened mm-hmm. is not what he clearly is saying.
Correct. Happened. Correct. That is correct. So, Theo, like, takes his Alka-Seltzer and rests for a little bit, and then George is like, are you good to help me carry the other organ downstairs? Because I kind of need that to practice. It's called a cabinet organ. And so Theo's like, yeah, we can fancy. Do that. I know. I have to learn so many extra shit for this. So, they carry the organ down, and then they both go back into the library, which it didn't explain why they did that. But they go back into the library. And
I guess they unlocked it.
They unlock it, yep. And then when they go back this time, George notices Theo's hat and jacket folded and placed on a tall box that he hadn't noticed before. And he's like, I don't know if I didn't notice it before because I was just focused on trying to find the gas smell.
Yeah, it was probably, he was already just confused as to why is the library not only unlocked, but the door open.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's a gas smell that he's not really being observant to what's going on. Like, I can see that.
The other thing, which he didn't think about this, when they went upstairs to get the organ, didn't notice any gas smell upstairs. But Theo said that he had been working on
the belfry, which is up.
The stuff that, So, George is just like, whatever, Theo, I hope you feel better. I gotta go. You wasted all my practice time. I gotta get home for dinner. So, they leave just before 6 and get home for dinner. And then, it is a Wednesday. What happens on Wednesdays? More church. Mm-hmm. So, they gotta go back to church that night for more church service. So, at the church service that evening, Blanche's aunt is there, and she's like, hey,
Blanche never came home.
Blanche did not come home. Does anyone know where she is? I'm really worried. So she asks Theo specifically because he's like,
why didn't she send a little telegraph text?
She probably wasn't hooked up to the
neighborhood,
the peanut line. But she asked Theo because, like, you know, he's, like, the nice neighborhood boy. He's very reliable.
He's involved in everything.
You know,
they obviously had a relationship. They knew each other.
And Theo is like, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Like, he offers to, he's very comforting. And he's like, you know what? I'm sure she'll be back. I will actually stop by tonight and bring her a book that I think she'll enjoy. And he did. He stopped by later that night. Obviously, Blanche was not there. And he dropped off a book for her. As Blanche's disappearance became known throughout the neighborhood, it kind of became common knowledge that Theo was the last person to be seen with her. But because he had such a good reputation, he wasn't considered a suspect.
Brock Turner.
And his friends and schoolmates would even, like, they would even, like, joke with him about, like, oh, you were the last one seen with Blanche, like, where have you got her? Everything's so funny when there's a girl that's missing. Okay. So, a week or so passes, and now it is Good Friday, April 12th.
Doesn't sound like it's going to be a very good Friday for a lot of people.
Well,
I'm taking a sip.
Okay.
It counts.
Minnie Williams is wearing a beautiful dress. She's wearing a turban to protect her hair that she had done that day. She's wearing a cape, which I assume is fashionable at the time. And she is...
I like capes because they have the cute little arm slots in the front.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the arm slots.
Mm-hmm. It's not like a magician's cape. It's
That's what I was thinking.
Stylish...
If the arm slots make all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And she is clutching a bouquet of flowers when she catches the 405 train that would take her to the San Francisco ferry terminal. Theo Durant was there to meet her at the terminal and accompany her over, I wrote the bay. I don't know what the ferry actually goes over. I assume the bay.
I assume so too.
Okay.
I'd like to go to San Francisco.
I would too. Not anytime soon, but, you know, eventually.
Yeah, when Critter is older.
There you go. I'll have a kid by then, maybe.
We could also leave them at home, too.
Oh, you're right.
Throw a couple of cookies in the kennel.
Jory can babysit.
Be a great babysitter.
I know. Be like Nana the dog. So, Minnie and Theo were going to the Young People's Christian Endeavor Society meeting. You know, the thing that they all went to.
Mm-hmm. Sounds fabulous.
I know. Listen, this book went into detail about some of the games that they played there, and I was like, too many details that I don't need to know, but also thank you. I mean, like, thank you for telling me some icebreaker games for later. I'll put that in my back pocket.
One of the most vivid memories I have from, like, some church-related, like, it was a lock-in. It was a 30-hour famine.
Ooh. Combining things. I love it.
Yeah, it was a 30-hour famine.
What's more fun than being locked in and not able to eat?
Right? Being duct taped to a wall, apparently. Shut up. Because that was one of the activities. And, yeah, it was duct tape one person to the wall.
Nice.
And whoever, whatever team stayed up the longest won. You didn't win anything in particular, I don't think.
It's bragging rights.
Because obviously you couldn't be rewarded with food.
Of course, yeah. Man. I will say, you know, a lot of emotional and, you know, spiritual trauma, but some of that youth group did some fun games. Mm-hmm.
So I was duct taped to a wall. I was like, I'm good to stay up here. And they're like, no, but your arm is turning purple. And I'm like, can't feel it. Let's go.
You're like, but we're winning.
We're going to take you down. I'm like, I'm good. Like, if you take me down, that's on you. I didn't lose this for us. You lost it.
Oh my gosh.
Could have been just delirious from the lack of food too, but who knows?
So they're going to the Young People's Christian Endeavor Society to play games like
not a,
tape people to the wall.
Not a good name. The 30-hour famine has a ring to it.
And this meeting is taking place in the home of one of the church elders named Tom Vogel. At 8:15 p.m., so Minnie sets out at 4:05 and is now 8:15. Mrs. Mary Ann McKay was walking home from work when she saw Theo and Minnie having what appeared to be a heated discussion in front of the church. So I'm just going to read a quote because I think that this says it best. So Minnie was leaning close to the boy, Theo, and seemed to be coaxing him to do something. Her gloved hand was outstretched toward him, palm up, and she was moving it up and down in emphasis. Demonstrating.
Thank you.
She didn't get the impression the girl was angry, just pleading. And then she heard Theo say, quote, oh, you're a coward. And what Mrs. McKay thought was that they were having a lover's quarrel and that Minnie was just, like, too scared to go home. Like, they had, like, had a tryst or something and that she was too scared to go home and, like, face her parents.
Because, again, blame the woman.
You know, as always. James Hodgins. Hodgind? James.
Started out real confident and really lost it.
I wanted to say Hodgson or Hodginson, but it's Hodgden, a claims adjuster, also saw them arguing around 8:15 while he was on his way to the corner store to buy a cigar. And at first, he thought that Minnie was a child. He thought that Theo was, quote, taking liberties with her. And so he actually went over to intervene. But when he got closer, he's like, oh, just kidding, that's an adult.
You're a very small adult.
You're a very small woman. You guys are a couple.
Like, sorry to interrupt. You guys are
cool. I'm going to leave. And then another man, Alexander Zenger, who is a Russian immigrant, who knew both Theo and Minnie very well, also saw them go into the church at 8:15 or roundabout. He kind of knew what was up. He had heard some rumors about the scandalous behaviors that the young people at Emmanuel might have been taking part in. Wink, wink.
I love it when there's, like, scandalous rumors around a church. What is that? Is it soaking? Is the trend?
Soaking? Ew. Is that what I think it is?
No.
Okay.
I think it was with Mormons.
Is that what I think it is?
Maybe. It's basically sex without movement.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a third party there to jump on the bed.
Oh my gosh, that's it.
That, like, forces.
That's in Jury Duty.
It's something I'd heard about before, but it was also at a book that I read. A character was researching it for James. It's a long story.
James Marsden acts as the jumper on the bed for a couple.
We haven't watched any more of that, but I did enjoy the first two episodes.
Oh my gosh. That's how I learned about that term.
Yeah. No, it's just like, I just love learning about, like, the hypocrisy. The weird, things.
Yeah.
Like, you act so pious and high and mighty. Yeah. Like, you look down on other people. Like, glass houses, don't throw stones, yeah. yada, 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 is basically my yeah. thing. It's like, don't look down on other people for yeah. having sex when you got that yeah. going on inside yeah. the church, apparently.
Well, what is also, I don't want to say ironic because that sounds mean, is that it's not sex that's going, well, it's not just sex that's going on here.
Drugs and rock and roll are involved too?
Sure, we'll call it that. So, good old Alexander, Sasha, mm-hmm. if you will.
I will, actually.
Yeah, I know. He's like, I'm going to wait. I'm going to see if they come out. Like, I'm going to, you know, time this thing or something. So he watches, and at 9 o'clock, Theo leaves the church alone. Alexander's like, all right, maybe I was wrong. Maybe there's, like, a bunch of kids in there, and I guess Minnie is just hanging out with her friends, and Theo got bored and left.
But so he's like, and waits, and Minnie never comes out.
But he's like, well, I'm bored. I'm not going to wait for her to come out. At 9:30, Theo finally arrives at the Young People's Christian Endeavor Society party thing. He's looking slightly disheveled, but not ill. He washes up, looks fine. No one notices any odd behavior that night, and he stays the whole night and departs with everyone else around 11:30. The following morning, Saturday, good Saturday, whatever the Saturday before Easter is called, around 10 a.m., several women are gathered in the Emmanuel Church library to prepare for decorating the church for the Easter Sunday service. And one woman who is not
a church library sounds like a happening place.
So much happening in the church library.
They use the library a lot. Like, when I went to church, I think there was a library, but mostly it was the fellowship hall and the parlor.
Yeah.
And
yeah, the last church I went to that had a library, it was on, like, the sixth floor. And it was a very intentional trip to go up there. Yeah. And I just checked out Christopher Churchmell's books, and that was it. And then you left. So they're hanging out in the library, and one woman who is not a member of Emmanuel commented, and she was like, your library is really weird because there are no books in it.
The crow?
Okay, but Lila Berry, who is 15.
Lila Berry, Lila says Berry. In the library.
Lila Berry.
Lila Berry. I didn't even in get the that. Library.
Lila Berry gets up to defend the library. Lila Berry, the library defender. She's like, no, no, we keep all of our books in this closet. I don't know why. And she's like, here, let me show you. And so she opens up the door to this closet. And there she finds the body of Minnie Williams, covered in blood. Her skirt is pushed up to her knees. Shocking. The waist of her dress is partially opened. And these women, who have never seen anything like this, are not sure that it's real. Like, they don't know.
It's a mannequin.
Yeah, they're literally like, is this a wax doll that the janitor's son, who steals from us often, has placed in here?
It's one of those, like, eyes playing tricks on you mm-hmm. thing, because your brain just, it doesn't understand really yeah. what it's seeing, because I'm sure to these women, they'd never heard of such a
yeah.
horrible thing.
Well, and why
like, this is swoon-worthy
yeah,
stuff,
yeah.
and yeah, because these are all probably just, like, nice, gentle yeah. ladies.
Yeah.
And a horrible thing like this would never happen. They no. wouldn't hear about it. You know, like, if this was ever being discussed, they would be asked to leave the room because yeah. their gentle ears couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
So, obviously, their brains can't process.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No.
Irritated.
So, they did also think, if it was real, could it be Blanche? Which I'm like, this is a, like, 4'10" body.
Mm-hmm.
It's not 5'7" Blanche, but whatever. Go
but
on.
But Blanche was missing.
Yes, Blanche was missing.
Nobody knew Minnie was missing
correct,
yet. Or
correct.
Not many people knew, if
correct,
anyone.
Correct. They were like, we don't know what's happening. Someone go get the pastor. So they go get the pastor. And this pastor is a fucking weirdo. And he was like, it's a what? And they're like, we think it's a, it, we're not sure. We, it could be a body. It could be like a wax figure. We're not sure. It could be Blanche. Like, we don't know. We need you to go check. And he's like, is she partial? Is she clothed? And they're like, well, kind of like her skirt's kind of pushed up and her dress is partially open. He literally is like, I can't compromise myself by seeing a partially naked woman. So I have to go get someone else.
This is a Baptist church.
This preacher is weird. I don't know what's wrong with him. He literally can't.
If he didn't want to see a naked woman, he'd go be Catholic.
He couldn't go.
Baptist preachers are allowed to have wives. They're allowed to see at least a woman
he
naked.
He said, this son said that he had not seen a naked woman at all. So.
Sounds like he's good.
Nerd.
Sounds like he did not want to see a naked woman.
That's true. I know. I'm like, you have some feelings to work out, Father. We don't call them that.
Goo.
So they go get George King's father, real father, his dad. So he comes back and he's like, this is a human body. Get the coroner. So the coroner arrives and so does Tom Vogel, who is the elder who had hosted the meeting
the party
thing the night before. He also happens...
That Minnie never showed up to.
Correct. He also happens to be a dentist. And so they're like, Tom, sorry, Dr. Vogel, we need you to identify, which he had looked at her already and was like, that's Minnie. I know her. But they're like, no, we need you to look at her teeth and identify her. And he's like, fine, I'm going to look at my friend.
It's not like
who's
there's
dead,
major
but, like,
decomp. That would, you know, mar her facial features.
So he looks in her mouth and he's like, yes, this is her. But while he's looking in her mouth, he's like, hey, there's something in her throat. So
I guess it's good that they made him do that.
I know. Doing the coroner's job for him. So the coroner pulls it out and it was strips of her underwear. And they also found a sharpened stake that had been fashioned from the runner of a desk drawer, and that had been used to force the cloth down her throat. They also found a kitchen knife that was lying on her chest with the handle broken off. She had several stab wounds to her chest, and also her wrists were cut so deeply that they were almost severed from her body. A later examination would find that she had been sexually assaulted, and then I read that she had been strangled to death, but then I also read that she had been asphyxiated, like, by the cloth in her.
She might have been strangled to, like, unconsciousness, mm-hmm. but not fully to death.
Yeah.
And then the underwear was added, so she was asphyxiated while unconscious. Yeah.
Thankfully, most of the stab wounds, as well as the wrist slashes, had been done post-mortem. And time of death was placed at around 8:30 p.m. So police informed the Morgans, which was the family that she had been staying with and working for, about her death. And they asked about any of her known associates. And the Morgans were like, well, she mentioned that she would be seeing Theo Durant on Friday night at the church social. And police were like, oh, that's weird. Theo Durant was also the last person seen with Blanche Lamont.
Wow, look at that. Cops making it good.
That's weird.
That doesn't happen often in our stories.
It doesn't.
The cops make an interesting intuitive leap.
Yeah. So they go to Theo's home, which he was not home, and they search his room, much to his mother's dismay. She's like literally following them around.
I can see that.
And they like,
how dare you accuse her baby boy?
And they like find his jacket and she's like, oh, let me go through the pockets first. And they're like, no, that's not how this works. And inside one of the pockets of his jacket, they find Minnie's purse. And so they're like, you're a suspect now. So the following day, Easter Sunday, police had searched every part of the church except for the belfry at this point. And now they are actively looking for Blanche, assuming that she is somewhere in the church. Because now they are like, we are assuming Theo.
I'm going to guess they didn't find Beth's in the belfry.
Not that they mentioned. I mean, they could still be up there. So they searched everywhere except for the belfry because it was locked and they didn't want to, like, break the door down. So they had to wait for the janitor, you know, with the delinquent son. So he gets there in the morning with the keys.
I have an issue with the janitor has the delinquent son.
Uh-huh.
But the janitor has the keys to all the places that the kid keeps breaking into and stealing things from. Why is the kid not stealing the keys from his father to break into the places and steal the things?
The son is not very smart. So the janitor shows up with the keys, but the lock is jammed. So they have to break the door down anyways. So when they finally get up into the belfry, they immediately find what they are looking for. Blanche Lamont's body was laying naked in the corner. But unlike the gruesome scene of Minnie's body, Blanche looked almost angelic. She had no visible signs of violence on her body. Her legs were together, her hands were crossed over her chest, and her hair had even been fanned out around her. And somehow the conditions in the belfry had preserved her body. So it had been 10 days since her death, and she looked fresh as a daisy. However,
I guess it was very dry.
Yeah, and I don't know. They made it seem like... I don't know enough about science for this, so let me read this next part, and then maybe you can explain this. So this is a quote that I took directly from this book, which is called... I don't know. I'll tell you later. I forgot it. My brain is scrambled. We're almost done. Aren't you glad that I don't go into detail about the trial?
He done did it. End of story.
Okay, so when they bring her down...
We don't need another two-parter.
When they brought her down, quote, the change in elevation resulted in an immediate transformation. As soon as the body reached the lower levels of the church, the pent-up process of decomposition released itself all at once, and by the time they got to the ground floor, the body had turned black. Does that happen?
That seems like hyperbole, honestly.
Can a body decompose all at once? Like that?
I don't know if it's a change in elevation. Again, I think it's a...
change in moisture?
Yeah, I think it's more of an atmospheric thing. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it might have been very, like, dry in the belfry. And, like, if it was well-sealed, it would have been, like, a nice, like, sealed tomb.
Yeah.
And then by then exposing her to, you know, also, like, sunlight and moisture and just moving her around, too, also might have jostled things. And I don't know if she went, like, all the way, like, black, or if it was just there was a visible darkening of the skin that, like, a visible change, sure, but not a... drastic change.
Yeah. Well, whatever color she turned, it allowed them to see bruising around her neck and distinct fingernail impressions.
Again, that would be more of a, like, a subtle but, like, obvious change.
No, she turned, like, black.
She went black. And because, yeah, the body's exhibit, there are some preserved human remains that it does turn you, like, and when I say black, I mean, like...
Can you reach up and grab Steven real quick? I feel like he's about to fall.
Around.
Oh, sorry.
I didn't realize. I just moving around on the chair must have... I'm going to stroke Steven for a minute. No, it will turn you, like... It's like it's so purple it's black. Like, black, not, you know, brown.
Yeah.
Like, when you get bruised, you're black and blue.
Yeah. So, after Blanche's body is removed and taken to the morgue, police search for her missing clothes, because she was found completely naked. And they do eventually find them up in the rafters, and they theorize that the killer, Theo, had planned on Blanche's body not being discovered until it was skeletal. Thus, hiding the clothes would help conceal her identity. So the plan was, like, she wasn't supposed to be discovered until she was unrecognizable.
He must have not been doing well in med school to think that it wouldn't take a very long time.
Yeah. Well,
for remains to become skeletal.
From what I read, no one ever went up in the belfry. Like, and he specifically jammed the lock.
But when he said, hey, I was up in the belfry doing stuff, George should have thought, like, oh, that's weird because nobody goes in the belfry. There.
And the next time
was... George is like, oh, you know, that makes sense because it's not weird to go to the belfry.
Yeah. Theo actually isn't that smart.
No.
So they arrest Theo the same day, and initially he is just arrested for the murder of Minnie Williams because the arresting officer had not yet found out that they had found Blanche.
Blanche's body.
And Theo, like I said, is not a smart boy. He changed his story several times. He's got some Pam Hupp vibes here.
I was about to say,
Pam. First, he claims that he hadn't seen Minnie in, like, months. And then he started coming up with different versions of why he had her purse. And meanwhile, police are like, we know that you saw her, like, 2 days ago. He kept insisting that he wanted to settle the matter and that he was most concerned for his mother and how she was going to handle everything. At some point, he was told about the discovery of Blanche's body and he was like,
oops,
shocked, you know. And he said at that point that he would like to get her killer in a room alone for an hour. And it's like, okay, and do what? What are you going to do?
Do you want us to bring a mirror in here?
Yeah. And then he just like kept talking. Like, he was, like, a nervous talker. And then he kept giving too many details. Like, he immediately set a timeline for his, like, whereabouts. Like, he immediately was like, I got to the church at 4:30. And then, like, immediately that was, like, too hard for him to sustain.
Nope.
So the trial started pretty quickly, I think. I don't know when the actual trial started, but the preliminary hearings began in April. So, like, it was underway pretty quickly. And Theo was eventually officially charged with the murders of both Minnie and Blanche. His defense team tried to shift the blame to the church pastor, who was weird as fuck, but
he's creepy weird, not murdery.
And then they also cited the lack of blood evidence on Theo and the fact that he had not confessed. But obviously that is not a good defense. And on October 29th of 1895. Wow, I wrote the whole wrong date. Whatever. Of October 29th of whatever year we're talking about, after just 20 minutes of deliberation, the jury returned a guilty verdict.
Yeah, sounds fair.
They literally voted once and they were like, oh, we all voted the same? Should we vote again just to make sure? All right. On November 8th, Theo was sentenced to death by hanging.
Cool.
And that sentence was carried out on January 7th of 1898. And that is the story of Theo Durant, because that's, I think, all we can take. And I'm sorry that that was so long.
If you want to see pictures of the people that we talked about in this episode, check out our Facebook and Instagram at the Tales We Tell Podcast. If you want to see photos but don't do the social media, check out our website, thetaleswetellpodcast.com. And if you want to support us and get yourself some sweet, sweet swag, check out redbubble.com. Search The Tales We Tell. We've got lots of different cute logos that you can put that on everything. And if you want to support us but you don't need the stuff, you can always become patrons at patreon.com. Search The Tales We Tell. You get early access, commercial-free listening, special bonus content, sometimes some stickers and love notes. And also, if you know, either a new listener, a long-time listener, whatever, you like what we're doing, if you could, from whatever platform you're listening on, just go and leave us a review. That's a big, big help of getting other people to help, you know, help other people find us. And so, you know, we continue to not just talk into the void. Help us reach others. Help us help other people find us. You know, you enjoy us. They will too, right?
Yes. A kind review, please.
Yeah.
Or just like the 5 stars and you don't have to write anything. Yeah. I mean, anything would be nice.
Just give us thumbs up.
Yeah. And thanks for sticking around with us. And I'm going to let Katie go home and go to bed.
Yeah.
And I'm also going to go to bed. So we'll see you guys next week. Bye.